Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
turn, I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, made me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they have fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon Kamajan, and once again, we're joined with our student panelists who are part of the UNI TV Media Collective, who are part of the Your World News family, and we're going to hit the ground running on this April 24th in the year 2015. We've got a loaded show for you and a very, I think, extremely important topic today, whether this was an election year or if it's not election year. I mean, as we know, we're heading into the United States Empire's election year of 2016. You know, so but this conversation that we discussed today is vastly important, and it's going to take a different type of tone and tenor in regard to what maybe some folks are accustomed to hearing on MSNBC and CNN and Fox News. As we know that when they talk about politics, it's not really driven towards communities of color. And then when they talk about getting out and getting the Black and Latino vote, it's really geared around trying to usher and keep people's mindsets within the framework of the two-party dictatorship, otherwise known as the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, and making sure that that energy and that focus is within those two parties, regardless of the fact that those parties, especially the Democratic Party, because that's seen as the, if you're a person of color, if you're African American, that's where you should be voting. You should be voting for the Democrats because for some special reason they're supposed to be, they're the self-anointed you know, party of liberation for Black folks and for Latinos. And as hopefully, you know, folks that are listening know, and hopefully there are folks that are listening that don't know this, because that's what this show is about, is to shed some light and some critical information and facts, as well as much, much important perspectives on information that's not put out there, so that folks that are listening maybe for the first time and are not really keen on a lot of this stuff, that this information and these perspectives kind of broaden your own perspectives regarding certain things. So, you know, if you're a Democratic Party cardholder, don't get away. Continue to listen, and hopefully by the end of this show, you'll understand where we're coming from, and maybe you'll take those Democratic Party cards, membership cards, and you'll burn them. You'll burn them or crumble them up, flush them down the stool. Put them in some incinerator, you know, what have you. Just get rid of them. So without further ado, I want to introduce our student panelists. To my right, we have Nancy, right? Nancy, if you want to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Nancy. I'm a senior studying biology at University of Maryland. Yeah, that's
good
for now.
All right. And Tim?
I'm Tim Bodoff-Lenchen, member of Your World News for quite some time now, and also an alum of the University of Maryland.
All
right. I'm Christine Hagen. I'm a freshman government and politics major. This is my second show, so I'm really excited.
Second show, and you'll be contributing quite a lot because in many ways the theme of this show was, you know, came off came from your brain trust. So, you know, this was in large part a brilliant idea of yours, you know, to have a show focused on some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today. And I want to say, I would say, you know, most importantly, you know, thoughts and deepest condolences go out to the family and friends of Freddie Gray from Baltimore, Maryland, who was brutally beaten to the point that his spinal cord was more than 85% severed by the Baltimore police on April 12th. And as perhaps you know now, on April 19th, he passed away and made his transition to the ancestors way before his time. And the Baltimore police had a lot to do with that. They took away this man, young man's life, took away his potential to live decades and decades and decades down the line to experience and see many things that you know, every human being should have the opportunity to experience. And he's no longer with us, and so our solidarity goes to his family, his friends, and all of those activists in Baltimore right now protesting, rightfully so, protesting the brutal and heinous murdering of that man. And it begs this question, you know these type of things, you know, we're supposed to be in the year 2015, but we're in an era of Jim Crow, a new era of Jim Crow that I would say is much more clever than the old Jim Crow that we know about in the 50s and the 40s and the 60s and even before that, where that was much more in your face. It was much more in your face. You knew the U.S. establishment, the white establishment, hated your guts if you were Black because they were murdering you ruthlessly with the police, with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, with COINTELPRO, you know, refusing to serve you, dumping, you know, food and soft drinks in your head, spitting in your face, all that kind of stuff. Legalized, you know, segregation, you know, go on and on. This new age Jim Crow is much different because it has tricked masses of Americans, the hoi polloi, to believing that the United States is no longer in an era of institutional racism, structural racism, or white supremacy by having, you know, music videos and TV and entertainment and sports, you know, replete with faces of color that are being showcased to give the illusion that if we were in an era of institutional racism, why would there be so many famous and rich, you know, stars on these reality shows and this, that, and the other, despite the fact that many of the images that are shown that are outright racist and racially stereotypical in and of themselves. But that couldn't be further than the truth, because the communities in which these people come from, these so-called rich and famous entertainers and athletes come from, they continue to catch hell, which includes catching hell by way of a police state, a perpetual police state in their communities that takes laws, lives, and profiles and brutalizes literally day in and day out. So we must, you know, continue to remain, you know, vigilant in our pursuit of justice and a complete restructuring of society, one that is built on humanity and humaneness, and the same type of justice that we'd be meted out if Tim went and killed somebody in cold blood, or somebody else, you know, any civilian killed somebody else in cold blood, you know, they would have to face their day in court and would most likely go to jail, go to prison. The same needs to go with police officers. I'm not talking about the slap on the wrist. Johan Mezeli is doing 9 months in jail for killing Oscar Grant on camera, because if that was a black man that killed anybody on camera like that, they'd be doing far more than nine months, far more than 9 months. So we are, as Michelle Alexander, this is the new Jim Crow, but it's not just the prison industrial complex. It is a perpetual, you know, devaluing of black life. And when you have that devaluing of black life, you have these types of things that continue to happen. I mean, this man had his spinal cord severed, and the video is there. And they said, and I will end on this, they said that, right, he looked a police officer in the eye and ran. So he was killed while running while black, being black, and looking a police officer in the eye. Now, we know that if you looked a white person in the eye in the 40s and the 30s, they would bring a lynch mob to your house and kill you. Many, many, many young men lost their lives because they looked somebody white in the eye, a white woman in the eye, and they were killed, all right? But this is 2015, and this is still going on. This is literally brought up by police officers that were a part of that he looked us in the eye and ran. So that raises suspiciousness. And anyone listening say, oh, well, that's suspicious, he's running. Even if you want to use that argument, what's the argument for them getting on top of him and bending his body into a pretzel formation to the point where his spinal cord snaps? What justification is that? What is that? Why? Well, that's the presumption of innocence is out. You are guilty if you are black. You are guilty until you are proven innocent. And you know what? Sometimes the police operate as judge, jury, and in this case, executioner. So with that saying, we will move on. I don't know if anyone has anything to chime in. Tim, you live in Baltimore City. I don't know if you have anything. You're no stranger to covering, you know, these type of topics regarding police brutality. What say you? And I full people should know now if they watch Your World News or Critical Insight. But full disclosure, Tim is a young white man. What say you?
I think that it ties together to the whole issue of capitalism and white supremacy in the U.S. I mean, Baltimore is a city that for a while now is plagued by extensive gentrification, and black people are seen as a disease by the police and by the U.S. government that has to be exterminated, and black people have been exterminated and committed genocide against by the U.S. government since its very foundation. So all these things tie together and are interrelated, and I think it comes back down to capitalism, which, of course, is tied with racism, and it's just trying to exterminate black people in Baltimore City and all across the country to whitewash the entire country and get rid of black people because of the white supremacy that exists within the minds of people of power.
Anybody else want to chime in on that?
I mean, I kind of was struck by you saying, like, it's 2015 and this is still happening. Like, this is a story that sounds like it should have been coming out 4 years ago or something. It's 2015 and, like, these things still happen. And I feel like there's a lot of issues that we talk about, like, you know, constantly because they consistently are issues that still need to be discussed. Like, you know, pre-K to prison pipeline and police brutality and, like, all of these things. But I feel like it comes down to... why people don't care, or why there isn't one unified voice of black people or people of color or just people that care about basic human rights demanding a change. So I feel like before we can even talk about what are we going to do about police brutality, what are we going to do about, you know, the way black people are portrayed in the media so that this is acceptable, I think it's more... how are we going to, like, unify ourselves and have everybody knowledgeable about these issues and care about these issues so that the voice of, you know, is heard, so that the voice is loud enough to be heard. That's how I feel about it.
I definitely agree with you. And, like, how Solomon was talking about how back in the days, you know, the enemy was so clear. And now we have this ambiguity where people of color, and especially other people who are not people of color, don't really understand, like, why are people protesting, like, oh my gosh, no, we live in a totally safe world or whatever. And it just has to do with the fact that we're so dumbed down. Like, if you don't actively try to find information and actually look at what's happening in the world, you're not going to know. And people don't want, you know, like, the mass media doesn't want you to know, or they want you to be angry at stuff that's not really important. And because of that, we have a lot of people, of young people, who really are generally, like, should be the voice of change. A lot of young people are not aware of the issues, and, you know, that affects how we go about it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's by design, this culture of individualism that's an inherent part of capitalism. You know, back in the 60s, you had these social movements and the sense of solidarity among oppressed peoples and people of color, not just in this country, but across the world. Cuba being the best example. And when you look at nowadays, I think part of the reason why people, many people, are so nonchalant about these things happening and disengaged is because of the culture of individualism. They don't identify with these things on a larger scale, seeing these people, victims, as their brothers and sisters. You know, it's blame the victim. You know, it's their fault. Mm-hmm. The individual is to blame, not the system, you know, and not the general larger forces. And I think that's one of the main reasons why we see this disengagement.
Yeah, like, just a point. Just like the difference between the African-American community and the African community, like, we're taught to respect the police, like, we're taught not to question, don't be like African-Americans. And we don't really see ourselves as, like, not really understanding the history behind, you know, what African-Americans went through, or the fact that, like, I don't know, like, they kind of, the civil rights movement kind of paved the way for us to come here and have some of the benefit that we have here. Also, just, like, the way that, like, let's look at, for example, I forgot what it's called, affirmative action. And we always think, like, it only benefits African-Americans, but it also benefits, you know, some Asian communities as well who can benefit from affirmative action. Like, it's not only a black person, but it's all about representation for the minority, so, like, people who are not represented as well.
No, I think that's a good point. I think you guys all bring up some really, like, salient and relevant, you know, points, you know, regarding, you know, a number of things. And I think it's a good segue to you, for you to set the table in terms of what you suggested we talk about today, because you mentioned some of these organizations and that have so-called been set up and perhaps they're not doing doing their job. So I'll let you, you know, set the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, again, going back to what you had said earlier, it's like it used to be that when something racist was happening, it was overtly racist. And so at the very least, you knew for a fact this is happening because I'm black and because this is a racist system. But I think that out of that, organizations came up where they were saying, okay, well, we as black people need to band together, we're going to do this. And what started as small, you know, radical groups that really were about affecting change, they got bigger, I think, got watered down, and then had to appeal to the less radical, you know, center. And then what you end up getting is this level of, okay, well, we have to give the black people something, so we're going to give them their rights up to this point. And because that's the accepted middle, it's almost like you're even being more, I guess, like, tricked or taken advantage of, because now it's like, okay, well, what do you really have to complain about? You've been given, you know, this level of rights or this level of whatever, and it looks like, oh, we should be okay because the president's black, so clearly America isn't racist. It should be okay because black people shouldn't be talking about what is racism, what is police brutality when there are black lawyers and black doctors or whatever, but just because we've allowed a certain level of progress or just because a certain level of progress has been given to us doesn't mean that we're all the way there, and I don't think it should be mistaken for, you know, like the civil rights movement is completely over or it's not needed anymore or there is no more fight to be had, if that makes sense.
I also think it's important to mention that there have been extremely progressive revolutionary organizations that have existed, and they were completely bombed, for example, by the U.S. government, like the Move House in Philadelphia in, I believe it was 1985, or Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So whenever black people try to do for self, whenever oppressed people try to do for self, whether it's here in this country or abroad, like Thomas Sankara or Patrice Lumumba, they get executed. And I think that is an issue that we cannot ignore as well, because it's one thing to point out those organizations that may still may have many areas to improve if it comes to changing this vastly unjust system. But on the other hand, when there are organizations that truly are committed to the people, then they're just taken out.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, look at the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. I mean, you even look at our Native American brothers and sisters with the American Indian Movement, the Chicano Movement, you know, on the West Coast, you know, the Young Lords, you know, the Puerto Rican independence folks who are fighting for the independence of Puerto Rico, even to this day, fighting, you know, folks, you should know this, that Puerto Rico is a U.S. colony. It's a U.S. colony to this day. And there are people that protest every single year because they want sovereignty. They want independence. They want independence, you know, and to be sovereign in and of themselves without the United States, you know, pressing down on its neck, you know, as a, you know, treating them as the colony that they are right now. But you're right. There have been, and even looking at you know, some other political movements. You look at what happened in Gary, Indiana, and the you know, decades ago, and you know, and the Black Power Conference in Newark, New Jersey, you know, decades ago. I mean, this was where black folks came together by the thousands, you know, to these different you know, conferences, you know, if you will, to organize a national independent black party, national independent black parties and independent black movements that are political, that were independent of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, because they felt that they needed that sovereignty, you know, in the quest for self-determination, because we cannot be have self-determination as long as we are, you know, a part of the Democratic Party. They're not doing anything, and it was Malcolm, it was Martin, and those people that warned us that the Democratic Party is, they're you know, white liberals, or they're wolves in sheep's clothing, or foxes in, you know, in sheep's clothing, and they will smile in your face, and they will come into your community, especially during the election year cycle, and they will tell you all the things that they're going to do for you, and just like a lover that continually cheats on their partner, they continually cheat and run away, but you know, we continue to ingratiate them and take them back into our homes, and continue to vote for the Democratic Party 94, 95, 96% of the time. And certainly the Republican Party is not the alternative to the Democratic Party. It's not in any shape, form, or fashion. But think to yourself, what has the Democratic Party, what has the Democratic Party done for you? When is the last time the Democratic Party incorporated it within its platform? Any kind of thrust behind dismantling institutional racism. They won't even say the two words together, institutional racism. They won't say it whatsoever. Fine, it might be a stretch for them to say white supremacy, but certainly you could say structural racism, institutional racism. They won't even come close to that. And they are definitely as equal warmongers as their Republican counterparts. And as people start to get all giddy and Hillary's running, remind yourself, this is Hillary Clinton that was the Secretary of State that was a warmonger. She is the same Hillary Clinton that wanted military action in Syria. She is the same Hillary Clinton that once Gaddafi was brutally murdered, having a bayonet, being sodomized with a bayonet and being shot in the head, like brutally. She's the one that was, you know, on television, and was caught saying, "We came, we saw, he died," and laughed like a little cackling witch that she is. What is that? What alternative is that? What alternative is that? How is Hillary Clinton, you know, somebody that we should be all excited about? What kind of new era? And really, it represents a third term of Bill Clinton, because many of the politics that she embraces, I mean, she has adopted those from her husband. It was her husband that bombed Sudan, a pharmaceutical plant that provided, you know, pharmaceutical medications for countless Sudanese, and he ordered the bombing of that. I mean, we can go on and on. The building of prisons, you know, the mass building of prisons. You know, look what he did in Yugoslavia. You know, and go on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, just like to kind of confirm what you were saying, I don't think a lot of people are really excited about Hillary Clinton. Well, if you look up on Google and you research her, there's a lot of things about her corruptions and like why she wouldn't make a good president. But I feel like if people are ignorant, they would definitely be like, "Oh my gosh, Hillary Clinton, yes." But yeah, I don't really think she would make a good president as well. But I think the whole idea of like why people are more prone to Democrats is the idea of like, you know, that, oh, we'll tax the rich people and get the benefits to the poor. And I think, like, I guess maybe it's the mentality that African Americans are, you know, they receive government benefits, even though that is not really true. The idea of, like, you know, I don't know, like, what kind of benefits they usually receive?
You're talking about the whole, isn't it, like, most people on welfare are black, even though most people on welfare are white.
Yeah,
but,
like, they'll help them and stuff. I think that's what people, like, I feel like even I, before learning a lot of this, I was like, the Democratic Party is the good one. The Republicans want to take benefits away from us because I come from a single-parent family, I've really benefited from, like, the government helping my family. Like, we wouldn't survive if it wasn't from it. So, like, the whole notion of, like, if you vote Republican, you know, like, you might get your benefits taken away, and the less of all evil is going to Democrats.
Yeah, but at the bottom of it is that it's still evil.
Right. I mean,
so
because
my devil is
six
inches tall, and the other one is, like, you know, 2 feet tall.
Exactly.
It's still, you know, I hear you. Yeah, it's that kind of train of thought. You're exactly right, and that goes into, that plays into, I think what Christine was getting at is that, you know, our collective as black people, you know, our collective political education is not where it should be. We need to be much, much more politically educated, because once you become more politically educated, you that's the first step in terms of mobilizing and galvanizing community by community, and us, you know, running, you know, because it's not about right off the bat running folks as president. It's like starting in your local municipalities and running independent candidates or candidates from an independent party to take over your school board, to take over your you know, your board, you know, for, you know, so you have a representative from this ward, and you have, I have a representative for this ward, and so, and we represent a majority. We have five of the nine, you know, so we can really, you know, start to make some waves. You know, we can block this proposed closing of 15 schools as they had in D.C. a couple of years ago. Block this closing of 54 schools as they had in Chicago, you know, a couple of years ago. We can do these things because we have the numbers. We have a majority, you know what I'm saying? You know, we have a majority, you know, plus one in our city council. So taking over, you know, city councils. And then once you're able to take over city councils, then you can start, because really we need to control our communities first and foremost. And then we can start thinking about running folks in states and then starting to build coalitions with other people of color, with, you know, even poor whites who are also politically miseducated in terms of not understanding, you know, why it's advantageous on their part to create coalitions with poor folks of color that are facing the same kinds of tribulations, minus the fact that you're white, and so you're not facing the trials and tribulations of being black or brown. But, if, you know, it gets into political education. We need to have political education so folks don't get duped into that whole, I'm voting for the lesser of two evils, and they're going to take away this and that, this, that, and the other, because it, that we can have all that, you know, and as they say, a bag of chips, if we, you know, have actual parties that represent our interests. And even looking at, for instance, parties that are out there in existence right now, like looking at the Green Party, which in 2008 I voted for a candidate for the Green Party. I voted for Cynthia McKinney for president and Rosa Clemente as vice president, two women of color. And it was, and this was at the time. Cynthia McKinney had more political experience than did Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama at the time. You know, she had more political experience, and so, you know, that wasn't talked about. And you know, and when you looked at her overall platform. You know, she was for peace. She was against the military-industrial complex. She knew U.S. foreign policy to the T. Because she had been a 12-year Democratic, you know, congresswoman from the state of Georgia, she knew it. I mean, knew it. So she was ready. I mean, she had all the bona fides to be a great president. But unfortunately, a lot of people that would have benefited from her candidacy just did not know about her and were duped into that whole thing. Like, oh well, I can't vote for somebody that has no chance of winning. I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils because I don't want such and such. And it's just a kind of a, I don't know what better to say, kind of like a loser mentality from the get-go, because, you know what, I would rather vote my conscience than to vote for somebody that ultimately it's going to keep me up at night that I voted for this person down the line. I mean, I would have, if I voted for Barack Obama, I would be so, so upset with myself to this day, because I would know that my vote, part and parcel, went towards, you know, the killing of so many people by drones, and that's a conversation that we'll ultimately be able to get into. On the other end, I want to continue this conversation, and I want to lead off with Christine again, because I want you to pick up, Christine, where you and I were talking offline. You were talking about, speaking of starting from where you are, you know, local municipalities. You were talking about the social apathy amongst black middle class, black upper class, but also college students that are in a position of privilege, and the social apathy that exists on your campus as well as other campuses. So I want to play this clip from Brother Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report, and on the end we'll pick up this conversation where we left off with Christine again.
From the 1960s, clear into the first decade of the new century, Black Americans were the most politically savvy, the most dependably and wisely skeptical U.S. constituency when it came to our government's bloody lies and misadventures overseas. Less than 10% of us endorsed the invasion of Iraq, but now, the day before the president's speech, a full 40% of Black Americans are willing to bomb Syria, a full 2% more than the 38% of white Americans who want this war. The only thing that's changed since Iraq is the party and the color of the president. Consumed by cowardice and ambition, most of our black misleadership class of politicians, preachers, TV talking heads, and others are perfectly willing to endorse a war in Syria based upon lies even flimsier than those the Bush-Cheney gang used to get us into Iraq. After all, the black cruise missile liberals reason, the president is black and a Democrat, and nobody's ever hurt their career by agreeing with a sitting president. Even the peace wing among black liberals, represented by figures like Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who affirms she will vote against Obama's war in Syria if given the chance, or Van Jones, who said he'd do the same if he had a vote, pretend to believe every single lie that the president and his advisors tell to justify his war. They never mention the monstrous hypocrisy of U.S. posturing on chemical weapons. They neglect to remind us that every one of the last 11 presidents has lied to get us in and to keep us into wars around the world, which have killed millions, 2 or 3 million in Vietnam alone, and another million perished in Iraq, and countless more in invasions, bombings, deployments of special forces, mercenaries, and drones on 4 continents, from Central and South America to Africa and the Middle East. They don't mention that the U.S. and its client states, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Israel, Jordan, and the Gulf states, are funding and supplying the international mercenaries who make up most of the Syrian rebels. By leaving out this crucial context, our black peace liberals make themselves completely unhelpful to, even stand directly in the way of, building any movement of principled opposition to wars of empire among black Americans. Their pretense of standing on the shoulders of Dr. King and other fighters for peace and freedom is just as hollow as Obama's was on the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. They can't fix their mouths to say that President Obama is lying to justify an unjust war. Among many other falsehoods, there is little or no evidence connecting the use of chemical weapons with the Syrian government. There are even reports that the rebels are or were in possession of chemical weapons themselves and may have carelessly mishandled them, causing the incident in late August. If Republicans were in power, black peace liberals like Barbara Lee and Van Jones, perhaps even black drone war liberals like Joyanne Reed and Melissa Harris Perry, would have little or no trouble calling them liars or reminding us of U.S. hypocrisy on chemical weapons. A warmongering lie should be a warmongering lie, no matter the color or the party of the president who tells us. But apparently it doesn't work that way for black liberals. Loyalty and craven deference to the president on the part of our black misleadership class is really loyalty to the system that makes their own careers and ambitions possible. It far outweighs their loyalty to the truth, or to the legacy of real truth tellers and movement builders. It means that whatever movement is built to oppose wars of empire among black people and among all Americans will have to be built in spite of and in opposition to our black misleadership class. For Black Agenda Report, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com.
That was Bruce Dixon. I mean, obviously that was from some time ago, a little more than a year ago, but it was very, very salient and relevant considering the conversation we're having right now, as well as the continued warmongering, but looking at how, you know, black Democrats, who, as he said, had no problem protesting, you know, when Bush was committing these crimes against humanity and this expansion of the theater of war and U.S. imperialism throughout the world, but have found reason not just to remain silent, but have actually found reason to actually speak up in support of the Obama administration's further expansion, deeper expansion of these of the theater of war. And so I want to turn over to you, Christine. You know, you're a college student. You routinely, you know, with your comrades, your peers within Justice for Juniors, routinely try to garner the support of more and more black students to get involved with going into juvenile detention centers and lending their time to youth that are incarcerated, And that's not the only, you know, issue that means something to you, but I just mentioned that one. But I've heard you discuss that there's a level of apathy within the black community on campus that is troubling to you. Do you want to shed some light on it and frame the discussion around this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Tim kind of touched on it earlier, talking about individualism. I think one of the reasons why, and I completely agree with what he said, one of the reasons why it's so difficult to convince people to care about anything or for people to even know about things, like you said, the people that Cynthia McKinney could have helped didn't even know who she was, is just because I think we're all thinking about ourselves and everyone's out for, you know, it's easier, I believe, when you're looking at like a Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, or, you know, just in Baltimore this past week, Freddie Gray, it's easier to say, oh, well, Trayvon Martin did something wrong. He shouldn't have reacted that way to George Zimmerman. Or it's easier to say Eric Garner shouldn't have been selling cigarettes, like he was in the wrong, so that's why he got treated the way he did. Or Freddie Gray shouldn't have run. He shouldn't have looked the officer in the eye and ran. That's why he got killed the way he did. And I think that when you can separate yourself from people that are struggling, when you can invent some sort of reason why it's okay, I'm going to be fine because I would never sell cigarettes illegally. I would never run from the police. I would never, I don't know, buy soda and a drink and, or soda and a candy and walk home in the dark. When you can separate yourself from these issues, it's easier for you to sleep at night. And so when we're trying to, I guess, recruit people to come to Justice for Juniors, I think you're asking people to look, I think it's too real for some people to look at, that we're going to go into a juvenile detention center and work with young kids who should be in middle school, in high school, playing outside and are now locked up for something that was, you know, probably, that was, for something that could happen to you, you know? So you're now asking people to enter situations where, okay, I can't separate myself from this kid, or I can't pretend that there's a difference between the two of us. It's just that you got really unlucky and I'm a little bit more fortunate than you are. So I feel like part of apathy, especially on this campus where everybody has a smartphone, you've got the entire internet, you know, at your fingertips, and just choosing to not know, I think that that's sort of like a defense mechanism, you know? Like, I can sleep easy at night if I don't think that this is going to happen to me because I'm somehow different from this person who looks exactly like me who had this happen because of them looking exactly like me.
I think the thing is also, like, thinking that other people are going to get involved. I don't need to get involved. Other people are already taking care of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think it's just the path of least resistance. But, I mean, we have to ask ourselves, do we truly want to change this unjust system, or do we just want a better position in this unjust system? And I think for a lot of people, the easier way out is just to say, I want a better position within the system. But then, as Martin Luther King said, silence is betrayal. You know this is going on. Your friends and your family are dying, you know. Or you know of someone all the time that literally gets shot in cold blood, but you choose to ignore it. So if you know what's going on and you deliberately choose not to do anything against it, then you are an enemy to oppressed people.
Yeah, and I think that goes along with just the way the system is set up, where you can look and see, oh, well, there are some black people who've made it, so if I work hard enough or if I do what I'm supposed to do and follow all these steps, then I can make it. So thinking that somehow you're going to be protected because you have what it takes or you have what everybody else doesn't have and you can be the one that makes it out, I think is why people don't fight the system the way they should, because they think that eventually they're going to be at the top of the food chain.
And they'll have their little trinkets and little rewards that they can be happy about, but on a whole, people are still going to be suffering and dying just like they are right now.
And this is definitely a fallacy. I mean, you know, we live in Maryland. I always feel like Maryland's a pretty progressive state. So when you hear stories like Freddie Gray or black men getting profiled, it's kind of surprising. We don't hear those things. So these are things that are supposed to be happening somewhere in the South, not here in Maryland. And definitely there's a fallacy that just because you're an educated black man or you have money, that the rules don't apply to you. That's a lie. Chris Rock posted, I think it was photos on him on Instagram on like three or four occasions where the police were following him and, like, trying to, I guess, question him or whatever. So if people even like Chris Rock, who's, like, a famous black person, can get racially profiled, what makes you think that just because you're a rich black person, you're not going to get the same bad treatment?
How do we, so, Christine, number one, what keeps you going in the face of so much social apathy? What keeps you going in the face of social apathy? And what, and are we looking at the prospects that if these students, if they don't get involved while they're on this campus, and they continue to go on, I think they graduate, that they're gonna go on to becoming young professionals that you know, work week in and week out, and then, you know, look forward to Thursday and Friday going to the club or the lounge, you know, the happy hour and that sort of thing. I say that because it was a few years ago when Tim and I were marching through the streets of D.C. with other members of the Black is Black Coalition and marching right down U Street, and it was on a Saturday, and you had all these, you know, bougie black folks that were in these restaurants, these window front restaurants on U Street, and looking out at you know, which was probably maybe, you know, 50 to 60 activists that were marching through the streets, you know, and you know, under the banner of it was like, you know, peace, justice, and like, I think reparations and so forth. It was much more than that. It was like, you know, anti-war protest. And I'll never forget. You remember seeing that? It was like these black folks that we look in, and we'd be like, yo, come on out. We're in the street, like, come on. We're like right in the street. We had the letters signed. Everything was official, like, to the police department. So the police department was out there because it was a sanctioned march. So they were just following the whatever, you know, making sure, you know, they couldn't do anything because it was legal. And we were calling these people out, and I remember, like, you know, even the restaurants where there was just like a small minority of white folks in there, it was almost like they looked and they were just embarrassed. Like they were just embarrassed. I'm not with those Negroes out there. I'm not a part of that. I'm not a part of those. Those are just rabble-rousing Negroes. Let's just keep drinking our mimosas. And I mean, they didn't want nothing to do with it. And it wasn't like we were flicking out. We were like, yo, come on out. And it was just, man, you know, so what keeps you going? Let's start with that. What keeps you going in the face of all that?
I mean, I think just looking at myself, and I know that there was a time where I didn't know the things that I know now, but because I had people that were willing to explain things to me, that were willing to teach me things that I never was even aware of, it changed my opinion about a lot. So I think what keeps me going is knowing that, like, if you have the right information and if you've educated yourself and you can share this with other people, then you have the ability to change people's minds. But I don't know, just, like, back on that story, I'm always remembered, like, the UVA student that got arrested by the police and they had, like, this whole march. Mm. I watched that video, and I remember, because I wasn't surprised, it was another black person that was, you know, mistreated by the police. That wasn't the surprising part of it for me, but I know when I watched the video and the kid kept screaming, like, I go to UVA, like, that's gonna, like,
yeah,
do anything, or, like, it was kind of, I felt like it was him being like, oh no, like, I'm not one of those other black people, like, I'm a rich black person, I go to a prestigious school, like, you have the wrong black kid. And I feel like for kids that don't, especially on this college campus, like, for black people that don't understand that, like, the police are making no distinction, like, white America is making no distinction, it's going to be a rude awakening like that. Like, I'm sure Martise Johnson's opinions about a lot of things have been changed just because he now realizes there is no safe. Like, black is black, and there's no distinction that you can draw, like, no classist distinction you can draw between poor black people and rich black people. You're still at some point going to end up in the same situation. So that's
right,
how I feel about it.
Right, and we actually have a caller on line one. We were just calling, maybe they have something to chime in. Caller, line one, you're on Your World News.
Hi, Hello.
Hello.
Hey there.
Okay, hi. You're on.
All right, cool. First of all, I love the conversation so far. Y'all are making some really good points. Sorry, I'm coming in and out. I don't know if you hear me, but I'm just going to keep going. When it comes to disenfranchisement of sort of the general population, I got to blame the schools. I hate to say it, but I got to blame the schools. I mean, I really blame the media, but the schools are sort of everybody's first push into the world that the media creates, so I blame the schools. There seems to be, citizens these days are seen as combatants by the police and by the system in general. That's why police stations are trained by military outfits and given military weaponry and judged based on how many of the numbers of arrests they get. They see us as enemy combatants, not like citizens to actually protect. And I think from an early age, people can feel that in schools, especially now, especially with cops everywhere in all the schools and the possibility of being arrested for stuff that you do when otherwise, back in the day, you would have gotten just suspended or expelled. I think kids know from an early age that they're sort of, that the system is massive and it's fighting them. And I think the system itself has sort of screwed itself by creating a sort of generation of anarchists because of that. There seems to be, when I grew up, my dad always told me, he always put it great, there seems to be a culture of failure going around because no one really has any faith in the school system. And this culture of failure, brings people to give you more respect for coming out of jail than coming out of college. So people just sort of shut themselves down and as a result don't learn the things that they need to know. And it's really sad, but I was unfortunately arrested in high school and I was arrested in the school for some stupid shit and walked out of the main hallway and it was just after school ended, so there were some kids were still around and they essentially looked at me like I was a hero or a god walking out of the school in handcuffs, and I got more respect from that one day than all of my scholastic achievements combined. And I think that's probably where it starts, where this disenfranchisement starts. And again, it all comes from the fact that they sort of see citizens these days not as people to protect, but combatants to control and just sort of silence.
Can you name something with the educational curriculum that you see as part and parcel of the problem with the educational system that you talk about?
There's pieces in every class. Well, first of all, the fact that everything's separated into different classes, science doesn't have to do with English. All these things are sort of separated out, and I think that prevents people from seeing the intersections between them all. That actually come to life in real life. But then besides that, I think there's examples in every single class. In health class, they teach you, they still teach you don't have sex, just don't have sex. That's your answer. If you have sex, you will get AIDS and you will die. So people are scared and they don't learn anything more. They sort of shut off and they don't trust people. For me, it came from DARE also, this DARE program. As soon as they start telling people that, drugs are bad and they'll kill you off break, and, you try some weed and it's – because everybody tries weed. I mean, come on. You try some and it's not dangerous at all, or it doesn't seem as dangerous as they say it is, then you're like, okay, well, if that's thought of to be the same thing as heroin, then I might as well try heroin too. Then, of course, once you realize that they're actually different, then you don't trust anything the government says after that. But then there's all these standardizations and all the tests that make you feel like a number, and all the classes and everything. And history class just teaches you one history. It doesn't teach you African history before slavery. It's black history, slavery and all that bullshit. Unfortunately, it's sort of in science teach you that the Hippocratic Oath comes from this, Romans, Greeks, and stuff. They don't tell you in Africa, They don't tell you the whole story, I don't think, in any of the classes. It comes from all directions. I think kids feel it and they don't know feel it. That's why Red Cell with things like hip hop. Fuck the police. Fuck the system.
All right.
You know.
All right. No, I appreciate it. You're breaking up a little bit. Then it was like choppy, but I think I got the gist of it at the end when you talked about the Hippocratic Oath. It mentioned, you know, the things like that. They'll talk about Hippocrates being the father of medicine, despite the fact that Imhotep, you know, was alive 3,000 years before him, and Hippocrates referred to himself as the child of Imhotep and those kind of things. And, you know, I think you were talking about the rebellious nature of, you know, songs like Fuck the Police from N.W.A., any other, you know, clarion calls from hip-hop artists, you know, denouncing police brutality and the institution of policing in, you know, in poor and black general. So, I appreciate you calling in, and I keep you on longer. It just on our end, it's just a little bit choppy. So at the end, we were hearing every like third
or
fourth.
Yeah, me too. So don't worry about it.
but please stay on and continue.
Listening intently.
All right, but stay on and continue to listen. We appreciate your call.
Just a comment on like
definitely,
Oklahoma.
Definitely.
Like the Oklahoma history of the backhoe, where basically the state didn't want to fund AP history anymore because I think they wanted to revamp the history and not kind of downplay America's like exceptionalism, and people were like, no, like America isn't that bad. So they were trying to actually have like a real discourse of like, this is what America, this is what we did, and people didn't want the students to learn growing up about both sides of, you know, the good and the bad side of the country. So definitely, that's definitely true that Americans are very close-minded. Like, the public school system isn't teaching us as much to be, you know, self-like aware and viewing the rest of the world and really viewing ourselves in, I don't know, like a more brother way, I think.
Yeah, and I think, and I agree, and I think that he was onto something, you know, because one of those other subjects is, and you know, Christine and Taylor, you're a government politics major as well. Both of you guys are government politics majors. But, you know, coming through high school, when you take civics class or if you have a government class, as you alluded to, you're taught to be pigeonholed into a certain way of thinking about when it comes to civics or it comes to, politics in America. So you're taught about, for the most part, unless you have some, like, super, super special teacher in some super, super special, you know, class. But most classes frame the narrative within, you know, Democrat, Republican. They frame it in a certain way. They frame it within, like, you know, and they even start off with the whole founding of this country and how the original, the so-called founding fathers, you know, framed the government. But they don't even talk about how, for instance, that founding was, number one, it's illegitimate because it didn't incorporate all the people of the land, because when you incorporate all the people of the land, you're incorporating enslaved Africans, you're also incorporating Native Americans whose land was stolen. But we can't do that because that narrative will completely change how we think about the founding fathers. If we tell them that the founding fathers were damn hypocrites and were enslaving people and had stolen the land. So we have to frame things in a very, so as you walk with me, it's like becomes very, very clear that why the narratives are so truncated, they're so, you know, narrowly focused, because if you give a broad focus, dare I say, we actually even learn things about the fact that the U.S. government itself, the whole frame of the U.S. government, you know, whole concept that was stolen from, you know, how Native American, how indigenous nations, how they had framed their own government. I mean, that's a little-known historical fact that they borrowed from what they observed Native American nations, how they had councils and how they were set up. And so that's how they started to frame, this branch of government, that branch of the government, that branch of the government. But no respect whatsoever for that. We can't do that. We have to make people believe that white is right and that the white man created all this and this, that, and the other, and that the white men that, that created all this were great men, and so if we're going to do that, we can't tell them that they were slave masters. We can't tell them that they were land thieves. We can't tell them that they waged war on Native Americans. We can't have any of that stuff. And the sad thing about it is that if you frame it like that, you have people that kids from various walks of life and different cultural backgrounds seeing the world in a much more humanitarian way, seeing the world in a much egalitarian way, seeing the world in a much more broad way, and having an utter respect for the struggle of people who have been tread upon for the building of this empire, and therefore these young people now go on to college, become ambassadors of these new perspectives that they've developed with the facts, and therefore will perhaps go on and graduate and start to frame a much more fair society. But what we have now is we have a mass of kids who are coming through who are products of that, and they see, you know, black youth that are complaining about this and the other, and their parents as like, yo, like, shut the hell up. Why are you complaining? As someone said, you know, why was Mike Brown, you know, there in the first place? Why was this guy running in the first place? Why was he running? Why was Walter Scott running in the first place? He wouldn't have gotten shot. And it's framed in that kind of way, and not just like white kids, but black kids and black and young black adults, like, saying this kind of bullshit, this kind of nonsense, this kind of insensitive, nonsense. But damn it, of course they're going to do that. I mean, they have, for the longest time, been celebrating, you know, warmongers and slave masters without knowing that they are warmongers. They were warmongers and slave masters and serial rapists and mass murderers and the like. So I think the caller was, like, really onto something, lastly, I'll say this, you know, Christine, you know, if you have a much more broad whatever, and then you start to even talk about these different independent political frames of thought and parties that came from different demographics of people of color, whether it's Native Americans or black folks, I think that you start to place in the minds, not telling them how to think, but to place in the minds through exposure youth that there can be, that there's something in the thought of having more than two main parties representing the entire country. There's something more about that. There's something much more demographic when it comes, you know, if you have people exposed to a myriad of political frames of thought through political parties that are vying for senator or congressperson or, you know, president or council member. But as long as we keep thinking it's just Democrat or Republican, we're going to see much of the same for a long time to come.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I agree with what the caller said 100%. Like, the education system is awful. There's this quote that I read somewhere, and I forget who said it, but it was something to the extent of nobody's ever going to give you the education that you need to overpower them or overtake them, and that's really always stuck with me. I was blessed enough to go to really, really great private Catholic schools, and it's not that I remember all the things that I learned in sixth grade, but I know that the overarching lesson that they were always trying to teach us was to think critically. And I had a teacher tell me, oh, Christine, like, you know, you like to read, blah, 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 like, this is good. And to be in that environment and to be told that you're smart and to be told that being intelligent is, like, a good thing, I think is something that a lot of kids, like the caller was saying, they don't get that in school. It's not cool to be doing, you know, smart things. And I think that brings it back to, if you are lucky enough to have received a good education and if you've reached this level of being a college student, you have a responsibility not to just take care of yourself and not to just worry about, oh, okay, I'm going to be rich and successful, but to turn around and say, I haven't made it until the rest of my people are also at a certain level.
Yeah.
So I think that it really goes back to, we can't can't be apathetic, because you can't fix the education system just being two people who care. It has to be all of us collectively. So people need to give, people need to care about something before we can fix anything, is what I think it goes
to. So don't confuse individual success with collective success.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. Just because you have become, you know, the CEO of this whatever, you become, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, whatever, doesn't mean that that's representative, unfortunately, of all, you know, black people or black women or what have you, or, you know, Native Americans or, you know, yeah, that's a good point.
For me, it always helps when I just realize to myself that we are in a war, and this is a literal war. People are dying all across the world. This administration in 6 years has bombed 7 countries. People are dying in the streets every single day, most often people of color. So we are in a war, and the enemy, the people in power, know that controlling the minds of the oppressed is their primary objective in order for them to accept their oppression and accept the status quo and accept this war and not even see it as a war, because I'm sure a lot of people, if I would say that there's a war going on right now, would look at me like I'm crazy. But that is exactly why what we're doing right now is so important, and why it's important for us, as Christine said, to educate our peers, or at least provide them with the information that the corporate media and the enemies of justice will not provide, so that people can make their own mind up and realize what's actually going on. Because the only way they're going to want change is, one, if they can see that things are so bad that they need to change, or two, if they are even aware that there is a better alternative to the system that currently exists, both of which are not being taught to them through the current media or education system.
In that light, what do you think about this?
On last Friday's Super Funky Soul Power Hour, the wonderful weekly radio show which the eminent Dr. Jared Ball does on WPFW-FM on Washington, D.C., our friend and comrade Tali Okuno wondered aloud at how he might soon have to explain to his now infant daughter that there used to be these things called public libraries and post offices and even public schools. So what has happened to us? How have the repeal of the New Deal and the Great Society, along with the enclosures of vast new spaces in media and the natural world, become possible? The answer is the elimination of Black America's role as anchor in the left wing of the national policy and the historic defection of Black leadership. This has been neatly accomplished by converting the historic Black freedom movement from a struggle for a broad spectrum of economic, human, and political rights into a struggle for mere civil rights under law. In this way, with the signing of a few key laws and a handful of court decisions, Black leadership declared victory and demobilized the movement that might have transformed America. It was the triumph of the autocratic vision of the NAACP, of Roy Wilkins and Thurgood Marshall, linked to the autocratic style of preachers like Dr. King, over the radical democratic vision of activists like Fannie Lou Hamer, Ella Baker, and the young people who led SNCC. To be fair, civil rights victories did sometimes lead to a measure of integration, to some public and private sector affirmative action, to diversity, and certainly to fat contracts for well-connected minority enterprises. But they never raised the minimum wage, or guaranteed a public education of equal quality in poor neighborhoods, or established the constitutional right to a vote, a home, a clean environment, or a job. Certainly, the alleged victory of the civil rights movement did not protect us from the alarming growth of the prison state in the 70s, the 80s, or the 90s. Are there really children who don't deserve quality education, or families that don't deserve homes? Are there really whole neighborhoods identified by a combination of race and class who don't deserve public transit, and a third of whose young men just deserve to be locked up? After the alleged victory of the so-called civil rights movement, the answer is apparently yes. The first places now to lose public schools, public transit, and public libraries are black communities like those in Detroit, New Orleans, Philly, and now, ominously, Metro Atlanta. It's a failure of black leadership nationally, and in those places, the historic failure of the black political class. After leading us down the blind alley of civil rights under law and securing its own piece of the pie, the black political class of preachers, politicians, business people, and wannabes has walked away from the rest of us. It never did propose alternatives to gentrification, to the warfare state, to environmental racism, or to the fact that every 36 hours, a black person is murdered by law enforcement, by private security forces, or by vigilantes. And it never led discussions over, let alone fights against, the privatization of education and everything else that's left to steal. Our black leaders did know how to celebrate the 60s and the victories of the civil rights movement, and how to get paid. And that was about all. And that's how we lost the public schools, the public libraries, and public transit. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com.
Christine, we spoke about privileged black folks, that, you know, and social apathy. Based on what we just listened, I want to ask your thoughts about, you know, some of those black organizations that are supposed to be geared towards helping black folks, such as the NAACP, Urban League, and their involvement in the corporations. But before you tackle that, do you think there's a legitimate cause for poor and oppressed, like, you know, indigently poor and oppressed black communities for being disengaged with the mainstream political environment in America or the United States today?
I can absolutely understand how a person who has been disenfranchised and marginalized would feel like my vote doesn't count, my vote doesn't matter, you know, whatever I do, whoever I vote for, I'm getting the same amount of nothing. I can absolutely understand how that would happen, but I think that that's kind of what the media is pushing you towards. Like, that feeling of hopelessness and that feeling of you can't make a difference is what they want, because now you're taking yourself out of the equation. So it's understandable, but I don't think that it should be excused. Like, I think that we should, and especially it's the onus, I think, is on, again, people who are educated to tell, you know, very poor black people or uneducated black people, this is what we need to do so that we can all, you know, better our situation. You can't take yourself out of the equation, then they're winning. You're giving them what they want. So I feel like it's not on them. I'm not putting the responsibility on them or, like, the blame on them. I think that it's on us. Is like college students, like, why have we not shared this information with everybody?
Just to, like, add what you're saying before you respond to your question, there's also, you know, the majority of people who are going to go to jail as black people are going to be people coming from poor neighborhoods, and when you go to jail in some state, you lose your right to vote, so that also can affect the voting thing. But also, really, I feel like the sometimes the problem of poor black people is not the problem of rich black people.
I don't agree with that. I think that the problem is, like, collective. I think that, like, their problems are my problems. Even if I'm not specifically worried about, I don't know, about how I'm going to pay for my health insurance or whatever, the fact that there are people that are worried about that, I feel like that's my issue.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. But basically what I mean is that they have different... They have different issues. So if the majority, if the middle class black folks have a different issue that it's not whatever the poor African Americans have, then they're probably not going to try to, you know, fight for the right as a collective.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's what you.
Or they believe that they.
Yeah. I think that individualism is, again, what Tim was touching on, where just because I'm not concerned about this, I'm not going to help you out, and it just kind of. people separating themselves when there is no separation there. So I don't know. I don't think that you should just be out for yourself. I think it's we all need to help each other out.
Absolutely. But, like, you know, when we're talking about, like, the prison industrial complex, that's not the problem of poor and middle-class black people. I mean, that's not a problem of middle-class black Americans. That's more of a problem with inner cities and people who are more poor.
I think maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, what you're saying is you're just trying to describe the demographics in terms of income that end up in the prison system. But I think what Christine is saying is it doesn't matter what the demographics are, these problems are our problems, and we need to work together to fix them.
I absolutely believe that, but I'm just trying to assuming how this is, like, this is why we have this disconnection between, in the black community, difference in income.
I mean, I guess I can see how, because there aren't issues that affect you on a day-to-day basis, you wouldn't be as concerned with them, but I know, like, I don't know, like, the work that I do with Justice for Juniors, I don't know anybody who's ever been incarcerated. I personally have never, I don't even know anybody who's lower class economically, but the fact that there are young black men who are in this juvenile detention system bothers me. You know, like, that's not my family, my immediate family. I don't know any of them. I've never had to deal with this issue. I've never even had to see the neighborhoods where they live, but, like, that's a problem for me. You know, so I think that you have to think of yourself as we're together. I think it really has to be a collective mindset, as opposed to thinking, because I don't see this on a daily basis or because this doesn't affect me personally, this isn't an issue, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that division shouldn't be there. I think that division is more of, like, the media saying, oh, you're not with them. Like, good for you for thinking that, like, the height of black excellence is, like, assimilation or, like, acceptance into white culture. So, like, you've made it because, like, you're up there, you know? Like, I think that's, like, a media issue. I don't think it's, like, an economic issue. I don't think I said that right, but that came out right.
Yeah, and I mean, any middle-class black person in America is literally walking on the shoulders and on the blood of countless African people who sacrificed their lives for them to be able to get into that position. So it's not like they just achieved that on their own out of nothing. That had countless of people sacrifice their lives. So to say that they don't have any responsibility would be historically and factually inaccurate.
Yeah, definitely agree. And it's almost it's like you're saying, you know, Christine, you know, we need to embrace this whole concept of Ubuntu. I am because you are. That even if I don't believe that somehow I'm not connected to, you know, this poor brother or sister who is facing hard times or is incarcerated, I mean, ultimately, in some shape, form, or fashion, you are connected to that person down the line. Where if the trend continues, it's going to, you know, the chickens will come home to roost, so to speak. It's going to impact you in some way, you know, one way or another. And you know, and that we have to be, like, selfless when we look at this and you know, be our brother's keepers and our sister's keepers, you know, one for all and all for one, and whatever, you know, cliche folks want to use, you know, use around that. But it's really a sad state of affairs when you hear, you know, I've heard, you know, middle-class blacks, in, for instance, right here in PG County, you know, and if you could take away the tone or tenor of their voice and it was just kind of masked by a computer, and you heard some of the things that they're saying about poor black folks in, like, Sea Pleasant, you know, poor black folks in other, you know, parts of Prince George's County, Capitol Heights, or what have you. I mean, you would swear it was a white person that was saying that. You know, I've heard this, you know, and I've gotten engaged in these kind of back and forth, you know, debates and arguments with these kind of bourgeoisie Negroes. It's the nicest way I can put it. You know, based on, you know, this, oh, you know, they're bringing us down, they're bringing the county down, and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, so you really don't see, like, how, you know, the fact that because, you know, a lot of folks in this area might not be, you know, property owners, how that impacts how much money is going into their school system. You don't see how the school systems have taught a lot of these kids to think of themselves as less than their white counterparts, and how all these different structural aspects of institutional racism have impacted them the same way it's impacted your damn mind to actually be talking about them like this. You know what I'm saying? What do you mean? You know, and it's just a sad state of it's just pathetic, man. And it's like almost like what Malcolm said, you know, he's like, you know, some of y'all left your minds in Africa. Some of y'all left your minds in Africa. You really did. You know, you left your minds in Africa. You know, you walk around, as Malcolm said, you know, you want to be there. You want to walk around and say, I'm the only black person in my neighborhood. I'm the only black person in my neighborhood. I'm the only black person in my job,
yeah.
As he said, you know, and being all proud about it. Being proud, and I'm the only black person on my block, and my block is a bunch of rich white folks. I'm the only black person there. Instead of saying, you know, there's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with it that I'm the only black person there. Yet, you know, 5 miles down the road, there's a bunch of Africans, black folks that are living, you know, in squalid type conditions. You know, and that's what made Malcolm so special, because he had no qualms, you know, making it plain, you know, saying it plain. And creating these like brilliant analogies so that people could really grasp, you know, these important concepts. I couldn't agree with you more, Christine. It's as long as we have one brother or sister that is, catching hell needlessly, you know, by way of structural racism. I mean, then it's on all of us to reach down and to try to help that person out as best as we possibly can. And dare I would say it would be a much better, cultural society that we live in if more of us accepted that whole notion of Ubuntu, you know.
To me personally, as a European, I would never say that oppressed people should depend on white people for liberation. I think that is destined for failure. But to me personally, I also can't let white people off the hook that are benefiting from this unjust system, that are benefiting from their white privilege and enjoying the fruits of this injustice and this war on oppressed people. So if any white person tries to argue that they as individuals don't have any part in this system, then that is, again, factually inaccurate, and they are a part of the system, and they're the beneficiaries of this injustice, and therefore they have a responsibility to take a stand and fight against it. And if they do not, then they're willing collaborators with it, and they must be seen as enemies of oppressed people.
So as we go around with, you know, closing comments, can I, throw something out, if you can incorporate what, you know, if you can throw out what you believe that, what's at least one tangible thing that we can do. And to change any of the that we can do to help. All right, it's not going to happen overnight. That we can help be that spoke in the wheel to help change any of the things that we've discussed on the program today. Whether it's social apathy, whether it's police brutality, whatever, anything. What can we do tangibly? And don't underestimate it. It could be something that you think is small, but it can be, you know, that small thing could be very, very, very vital, even if it's, you know, engaging in conversation with others. You want to start with you, Nancy?
Absolutely. I think it definitely starts with educating our peers and creating, I guess, areas for people to have communication about these issues. So I think it starts with, like, people who are educated and sharing the information with other people so that they also can.
I think that if you can't convince people to care about the suffering of others just because other people are suffering, then to make people understand that this very well could happen to you is the next best thing. And so I think being able to talk people through these instances where you ask them, well, Freddie Gray got killed for what? Because he ran? Like, what is that actually? And being able to explain to people this could be you, I think that's the most I think that that's the easiest way I know how of to convince people that something's wrong.
Engaging in conversations and putting their encouraging them to put themselves in those individual shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But this could be you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah.
I agree. I think it starts with ourselves and what we are doing with the information that we have, and providing the alternative media sources, the education we've received that promotes justice and equity and is anti-war, anti-imperialism, and sharing that with other people to help liberate their minds as well. Of course, not imposing it, but offering that information, and then using that knowledge to actively organize on a community level first and foremost. As Solomon mentioned, looking at the school system, looking at the system of policing as the Black Panthers did when they self-policed their communities, looking at health in the community as community organizations have started community gardens, have taken even so-called alternative medicine, which is a funny name because modern Western medicine only has existed for a few decades, but yet the medicine that is thousands of years old is called alternative. And through all these systems that the oppressors use to oppress, developing separate and unique and own institutions that provide those same services to the community in a way that the community controls, I think, is absolutely key. If we want to move forward and have a better system in this country and in the world, for that matter.
Thank you. And Christine, can you give the website out for Justice for Junior? Is this, if someone's listening right now, you know, live or on archive, you know, I encourage you to engage yourself with some of these students who are doing some really, really good work. Christine's a part of an organization called Justice for Juniors that, as we said, you know, goes out week in and week out and does really good work in juvenile detention centers, and also when they're released from those juvenile detention centers, you know, working with them and incorporating them and really lending their social resources, their social capital, if you will, to them. What is the website if somebody wants to get more information, maybe even start something like that on their own campus or their own community?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page. It's Justice 4, and the numbers, it's the number 4, Juniors. And we also have a Gmail, justiceforjuniors@gmail.com, if anybody has any questions about that. Yeah, we'd really appreciate hearing from people.
That's what's up. And in closing, I just want to say that, you know, we need to reclaim our minds. A lot of us have been taught over the years, and as Christine said before, you know, none of us with the information that we have right now came to have that information while we were born. We were exposed to it, and some of the information is bad information that we were exposed to. And then later down the line, you know, some of us have been exposed to the truth and have been exposed to perspectives that are commonly suppressed. We need to reclaim our minds, and that means, like, you know, if you're trying to incorporate a better physical diet for yourself, a nutritional diet, you have to start weaning yourself off of bad food, okay? And so, you know, in that same vein, we have to wean ourselves off of the bad psychological food that is, you know, a lot of the imagery, the acceptable versions of blackness and brownness that they show us on hip-hop videos. You know, you don't have to accept that stuff. You don't even have to support that stuff. Please visit yourworldnews.org. We've got tons of examples of so-called alternative hip-hop artists that are there that are empowering minds and so forth that are much, much, you know, better for you than the Lil Wayne's and the Jeezy's and the Nicki Minaj's that they want to overdose us with. And as they overdose you with that, it will have a tremendous negative impact on your mind. And don't worry about that cue. We continue to go on. It's not going to shut us down at all. And lastly, please take it upon yourself to not read, you know, certain books, but to study certain books. And I say once again, go to yourworldnews.org. We've got a book list up there of some really powerful books and some documentaries that touch on a lot of what we were talking about today. And you can tune into those to that site by going to yourworldnews.org and share the information that you acquire from reading those books and from studying the documentaries. We have to study, and break out of this mentality, because all you're not, and I think Christine and all the students touch on this, you're not going to get it in your typical college class. College campuses and universities in general kind of promote and push the status quo. If you're an economy major or a business major, they're pushing the status quo for being a good capitalist. They're not going to expose you to alternative economic systems that can make you a much more comprehensive economist, because you know about capitalism, you know about this, you know about socialism, you know about this. But they're not trying to do that because they want the growth of capitalism to go on unabated. And the same goes for the justice system and the so-called, political system. So understand these things and do your best to break out. And we've got to do this together. We have no other choice, because we cannot do it by ourselves. We need to push and grow and expand this critical mass. And I say that to say that it only took, a little over 1% of the entire adult population in the 60s to invoke change. It was that critical mass that was the most consistent. Okay, it wasn't half of America out in the streets. It was a critical mass that ended up being a minority in terms of a number, a numerical minority. But they were consistent week in and week out, day in and day out, month in and month out, year in and year out, and they continued until they found an opening in the system to really invoke some strong change. And that strong change was not the end-all, be-all, but it certainly gave us the batons that we need to grab and to carry on and to push forward, because as long as we have these people of color being slain in the streets and murdered in the streets, unarmed, innocently, just because of the color of their skin or their religion or their culture, what have you, that is an injustice. And as Dr. King said lastly, an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. It's a threat to justice everywhere. And what happened to that man in Baltimore, Freddie Gray, and what happened to Walter Scott and Ayanna Stanley Jones, and we could go on and on, that would be a show in and of itself, that unequivocally is a threat to justice everywhere. And what happened to, Abdul, who's in Afghanistan or Pakistan, young man there, that impacts us here. And that's a threat to justice everywhere. And their lives are no more valuable than the lives of American nationals. Their lives are no less valuable, I should say, than the lives of American nationals. A life is a life, and they are all equal and should be seen that way. So until next time, you've been tuned into Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive, and I couldn't think of a more apropos song than this one to take us out. This is Public Enemy with Fight the Power.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
lives with help to set the lies. Designed to fill your mind now that you realize the prize arrives. We got the bumps and stuff to make it tough. From the heart, it's the start of work of art to revolutionize. Make a change, something strange.
People,
we are the same. No, we're not the same, because we don't know the game. What we need is awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this?
Yeah.
I love it. Let's get down to business. Mental self-defense or fitness. So rest the show.
Talk to me about the future of Public Enemy.
Future of Public Enemy got a